Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Sports Podcast Network. Thank you for joining me again this week. On this episode of the show, we only recognize three quarters, and I say we because I'm joined by my friend Kevin Ferrigan. And Kevin, we're ignoring that fourth quarter that we just had to go through, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, it made me want to pour bleach into my eyes, so let's pretend it never happened.
I'm happy to pretend it didn't happen because we had a pretty damn impressive game from the Bulls against the New Orleans Pelicans up until three quarters. They were up by 21 points at the end of three quarters. I don't know what happened in the end of that fourth quarter or in that fourth quarter. I do know what happened. The Bulls played their worst players, and the Pelicans are a much deeper team, and lo and behold, the Pelicans came back and won. But it's not necessarily about the results in preseasons, but it dampened it somewhat, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope, even as kind of crummy as some of the guys in the back part of the Bulls rotation that were playing in that fourth quarter are, you would hope that they would be able to hold on to a 21-point lead against what was mostly also backups for the Pelicans, but evidently that was too big of an ask, and they lost by 2 points. So, not the best way to finish it, but I think, not to jump too much into it, but I do think that some of the stuff that resulted in that comeback was things that I noticed about the Bulls defense, even with the starters, and I don't know, you know, whether to get too worked up about it at this point, but it I felt like the 21-point lead, you should never blow a 21-point lead, but I felt like it was a little bit fool's gold because I didn't love some of the shots they were giving up. It just seemed like the Pelicans kind of missed them. I could be wrong about that. I could just be being, you know, glass half empty, which is my general bent. I'd have to go and actually look at, you know, through three quarters, what was like the percentage of contested versus open shots that, on the tracking data, if that's available for preseason games. I don't know. But it just felt to me like they were giving up some pretty easy 3-point shots or pretty open 3-point shots. And then Zion was kind of doing whatever he wanted whenever he got to touch the ball. So the defense is a bit of a concern to me.
Yeah, and it wasn't great against the Bucks either, but I guess whilst we have our issues and whilst it was maybe somewhat predictable that defense was going to be a problem, I guess we were somewhat hopeful of the offensive end maybe ticking over a bit and maybe looking a little bit better. And thus far against the Bucks and particularly against the Pelicans, again, we're ignoring the final quarter there, but the offense at least looks, I don't know, reimagined, I guess. It looks re-envisioned and just looks to be functioning at a higher level, which I guess is where most of the attention has probably gone from the Bulls fans' perspective, more so than defense. And I think that's fair. And maybe we can start there and we can work our way back to the defense and maybe some of the other things we haven't loved over the first two games. But I think it's only fair we start with the offense.
Let's not be our usual pessimistic selves. Let's move to something that's a little bit more positive.
Well, I mean, 24 assists in the first half. That's pretty positive.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that the ball was definitely, and this has been true across both games. Stefan from The Athletic tweeted out the stats on the distribution of where their points were coming from in the first game, and I would be very surprised if it wasn't very similar. In this game, they're getting their shots in the paint and at the 3-point line. The ball is definitely moving. It's with a few exceptions, but for the most part, the ball is not sticking in any one person's hands, except for on the few occasions when Chris Dunn touches the ball, and then Zach is still has a tendency to want to pound the air out of the ball. He's not as bad as he used to be about that. He is moving it better than he has for most of his career, but relative to sort of the way that the offense flows when those guys don't see the ball or aren't on the court, it is sort of a little bit noticeable. But overall, the offense definitely, there's a lot. It seems like there's a lot more cutting going on the weak side. There's, you know, it's not just one action and then everybody else stands around and watches it. It's not throw the ball into somebody who's a big lumbering post-up center, like what they were doing with Robin Lopez for much of last year during Boylan's tenure, and also tried to do with Wendell, even though he's relatively undersized for a center, and posting him up is a terrible use of his skill set. But just overall, like the offense definitely looks much, much better. And as sort of critical as I was being of the defense, I think that it is probably easier to install a new offensive system and get guys to really buy into that, especially guys that are high IQ offensive players, like Satoransky, like Thad Young, and even Lowry. I think is sort of poor as his with the ball in his hands creation skills can be sometimes. I think he is like pretty good when guys are cutting around him, and also he himself is a smart and intelligent cutter when he doesn't have the ball, and that was kind of wasted a lot in prior versions of the Bulls team with him on it, because he didn't have anybody that had their head up and was looking to make passes to a cutting big man.
Yeah, I mean that's all. They're all good points, and I don't know where to start with the offense because there's been so many changes that I don't know what the catalyst is or whether it's just again we're recording this straight after the game, and the ultimate caveat, of course, is that it's only two preseason games, so who knows if all this holds. But I wonder if it. I don't think it's a coincidence. I'll say this: that Tomas Satoransky started for this team today, and the offense looked a lot better, even against the Bucks. The offense looked good against the Bucks, but it looked otherworldly good against the Pelicans today. But I'm wondering if maybe it's a bit of correlation, maybe it's causation. I don't know exactly what the case is, but I'm not necessarily surprised that starting Satoransky in a lineup with LaVine, Markkanen, Otto Porter, of course, Cristiano Felicio is out there as well. We'll talk about that last bit a little bit later on, but is there some correlation or causation with Satoransky being in there, maybe the offense flowing a little bit better than certainly what it did last season, but even better than what it did against that Bucks game?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a couple of reasons for that. I think that Satoransky is, like I was mentioning, kind of a smart player. Not kind of, he is a smart player who makes quick decisions when he has the ball. He's either gonna pass it or try to dribble to a more advantageous situation or shoot it, and he's not gonna really stand and hold the ball and really think about it for too long. He's a very sort of reactive player, but not in a way that is not in a way that is like he's letting the defense dictate things. He just is going to make decisions quickly, and that makes a huge difference in terms of what an offense can look like. And then I think the other thing is that a lot of what the Bulls were doing, so far as I could tell offensively, and again, I'd have to like go back and really watch film to be able to say this with like certainty, but like from what I could tell, on first watch, like in real time, it seemed like a lot of what they were way that they were able to get their shot distribution sort of to what they were aiming for, basically good shots, high value shots at the in the paint and behind the 3-point line, is that they would get somebody driving downhill into the paint and then kick it out and then swing it as the defense is scrambling off of that. Chris Dunn, because he can't really shoot very well, doesn't space the floor all that well, and so you don't have as much room to operate for guys like Zach to get going downhill. I mean, there's things you can do to still get those guys opportunities and to get them going downhill, even with a sort of subpar shooter out there with them. But it just makes it way more easy, and you don't even really have to think about it if you have somebody who just standing in the corner is a threat to shoot 40%, And, you know, Satoransky isn't also isn't going to let the defense off the hook by just standing in the corner. Like, if you're just going to park somebody that by him who's watching Zach start to drive towards the basket, and they take their eyes off of Satoransky, he's again smart enough to cut to the basket and get a bucket that way. So like, he's just like such a bigger off-ball threat than Chris Dunn, that and just such a smarter and faster decision maker, that it really opens up the offense quite a bit. And you know, I would be very surprised if he's not the starter come the start of the season, especially if they actually have aspirations of making the playoffs. You need to play your best players, and Satoransky is, he's just better than Chris Dunn, and he fits this personnel much better.
Yeah, 100%. And like I mentioned before, we're recording this straight after the game, so as the news is coming out post-game, obviously we're learning about it as we're recording. And to that point, Jim Boylan has just basically said that he will have a decision on his starting point guard probably before preseason is done. And I'm assuming, based on that language, that it means Satoransky is likely to be the guy for all the reasons that you sort of mentioned. But yeah, the offense just flowed a lot quicker, a lot smarter. And Boylan has been emphasizing, you know, half a second, that's all you need to make some sort of positive play, whether it's shoot, whether it's dribble, or whether it's move the ball on. Just make a decision quickly. And to your exact point, Satoransky does that, whereas Dunn probably takes maybe a second and a half to survey the defense, what he's going to be doing, whether he's going to be dribbling, whether he's going to take a shot, whatever he may be doing. He takes some time, whereas Sato doesn't do that, and it's pretty clear that I think he's shaping into that starting point guard. 11 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds for Satoransky in 20 minutes, shot 5 from 6 from the field, so he was pretty damn effective. He didn't start that great because he had a couple turnovers, but after that point, he was damn impressive. Yeah, so
he made a couple of lazy passes early in the game that were, you could tell he wasn't fully kind of engaged in the game yet. It seemed like he was just not present yet, and then he snapped out of it.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, this Pelicans defense, they're big and they're large and they're quick and they can switch everything as well. So the Bulls had like 5 or 6 turnovers in that first quarter period where they were just throwing away casually. But at the same time, I mean, those Pelicans can move on the court. But I guess once they got past that point, the offense really kicked into gear and sort of midway through that first quarter into that second quarter as well. And I guess it was Zach LaVine who was doing most of the damage. He had 28 points in 24 minutes, 10 of 16 shooting. He has continued his growth from last season, it would seem. He was pretty damn good against the Bucks. He was amazing against the Pelicans. It seems like this is shaping up to be his offense at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. I think Zach is, you know, I think there was some question before these games started, whose offense was it going to be? I think just by nature of skill set and talent level, that it was always going to be this. I think some people thought, well, maybe they'll, you know, try to center the offense more around Lauri Markkanen. That, you know, very much does not seem to be the case. And some of that, I think, is just this sort of the driving kick, make quick decisions with the ball, pass it, keep the ball moving side to side, as Tom Thibodeau used to always say. I think that, you know, having that focus is largely good, but somebody that's a dependent player like Lowry, if he's not more aggressive about hunting the ball, hunting openings in that offense, he can fall through the cracks. And I think that's largely what we've seen the first 2 games. Which has been, you know, kind of disappointing for me. I think the opposite is true of Zach. He is, you know, very clearly wants to make the All-Star game. You know, it's in Chicago this year. Prior to the season, I think it was even last season, was talking about how if they were winning more, he probably would be getting consideration for that. You know, I think it was kind of silly, but he said something in an interview to the effect of, what's the difference between me and Kemba Walker when you look at our numbers? And he said, it's, you know, it's just that his team has more wins than mine. You know, I don't think that's the only difference. I think that, you know, even as small as he is, Kemba is less bad defensive player than Zach. But that's all kind of besides the point. The larger point is that this definitely feels like Zach's offense. Whether that's a to the extent that it's anybody's offense, like I said, it does feel kind of like they are trying for a sort of egalitarian sort of thing. But to the extent that they need somebody to be the threat that makes that whole thing work, it's Zach. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing remains to be seen, but so far it's looked pretty good.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be an interesting push and pull because I think, yeah, Jim Boylan has talked about multiple ball handlers. He wants multiple creators, and I think we see that when they grab and go off a defensive play, they finish off the play, they rebound the ball, they push on. There was a number of times where Otto Porter was leading the break. He was finding Kobe White for a three. That looked nice. Obviously, Zach and Crane and go. Lowry can do that. Pretty much they've got four or five guys on the court. Maybe not when Feliciano is on there that they have five. But beyond that, they've got three or four guys that can sort of grab and go and create in that sense. But when the game sort of slows down a bit, when it enters that half court, it does feel like Zach LaVine's offense, and there has to be a guy at that point. And I guess that's been the interesting thing or the interesting takeaway after two preseason games that I don't know what's up with Lowry, but he seems somewhat passive. I think I'm pretty sure he's shot 5 for 12 for both games. He definitely was 5 for 12 from the field against the Pelicans, I believe. And I'm just checking the
Yep,
Bucks
that's
box score
correct.
as well, 5 of 12 as well. So not the greatest of shooting. He's shot pretty well from the 3-point line, but beyond his numbers, I think it's probably more his play in terms of his aggression, and that was probably the biggest question I had about Lowry and the offense as to whose it should be coming into it. As to, is Lowry ready or prepared to take the offense away from Zach or vice versa? And I'm just not of the opinion that the offense should be run through Lowry Markkanen if he's not prepared to go and chase it and go after it. And now, again, caveat, two preseason games, but he has looked a little bit passive out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fine line, right? Like I don't think Lowry is good enough at this point to be the hub of a good offense. So I think that it's right for the Bulls. I think their most talented offensive player is clearly Zach. That statement in and of itself is a little bit like that's why the Bulls are projected to win mid-30s games this year. It's like if Zach LaVine is your most talented offensive player, no matter how much better the supporting cast got, like that does put a little bit of a ceiling on what you can be. And I don't say that like as some great slight against Zach LaVine. It's just like he's a tremendous scorer, but like he had one assist tonight, he had one assist and three turnovers. So 28 points on what amounts to 17 or 18 shooting possessions, because he had four free throw attempts and 16 field goal attempts. Like, that's great efficiency. You take that every time, but it only goes so far if you're not able to translate that into production for your teammates. I think that overall, like I said, the offense was humming for the three quarters that the starters actually played in. Obviously Zach was a part of that, so it's not really fair to beat up on him for this particular game. But I just think in terms of the bigger picture, I think it makes sense to build the offense around him because he's the best you got. I think that it's more with Lowry, it's not so much that I want him to be the first option. I just he had fewer shots this game than Otto Porter. And Otto, is largely a spot-up guy, or that's what he's traditionally been for most of his career. Obviously, he's flashed in Chicago, he's flashed a little bit more, playmaking and off the dribble game and things like that that we hadn't really seen in Washington and hadn't really seen in since he was at Georgetown. But like the fact that Otto has more field goals than or field goal attempts than Lowry is, I don't think that that's great for him, and it's more so just like his body language. He kind of like seems like he's floating out there. I will say on the encouraging side of things for Lowry, I think his biggest weakness as an offensive player is similar to what I was talking about with Zach, is like he hasn't really shown much as a passer or facilitator. Well, he had four assists tonight in just under 24 minutes of play. So like that's good. If he's obviously you want to see him shoot the ball better, but like if he's gonna rack up assists like that, I thought he made a couple of nice passes that led to assists or that were assists in the short roll. Basically, he was the roll man on a pick and had to make a decision off of a one dribble and, you know, laid it off to somebody who was cutting as his defender stepped up and, you know, had a couple of nifty passes like that. And, you know, if he can do more of that, and that really will help the Bulls. And like I said, I think he's a smart player. He has the international background. And like, I think having an offense where guys are cutting more away from the ball will definitely help him. Because it's, you know, actions that you can kind of anticipate, but he doesn't necessarily have to create everything out of whole cloth. He just has to make the right read. And I think that that's going to be a help for him. But I just would like to see him be a little bit more aggressive about asserting himself as, you know, sure, not the number one option, but he should be the number two option on this team. And I think that he really needs to be a little bit more assertive about that.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and I go back and forth as to whether, again, it's preseason, so I don't want to go off the deep end, but it kind of feels like it's in his DNA to be that team-first guy where he's more than comfortable sharing the ball, more than comfortable with some of his teammates who are more prone to jack up some shots. He's more than happy to get the balls to those guys, and whilst that's commendable, I suppose at the same time, for Larry to fulfill his ceiling, you do want him to take some control, even if he isn't that number one option like you sort of stated. But an interesting element that we had in this game that we didn't necessarily have against the Bucks was we got to see Luke Kornet for the first time in a Bulls uniform, and he was pretty damn good as well, to the point where it seems like, well, he definitely went past Cristiano Felicio, who started the game at center. He moved into that Keith Bogans role pretty quickly, where he played the first 6 or 7 minutes. We didn't really see him again until bench or garbage time. But Luke Kornet came in, and he was pretty damn effective straight away, to the point where it seems like he as well has gone past Cristiano Felicio, as has Daniel Gafford, I would assume, as well. So what did you make of Kornet, and more broadly the potential of this Bulls front court rotation, especially once Wendell Carter comes back?
Yeah, I think I think that they have enough depth in the front court spot that really we really shouldn't. I'm going to go off on a tangent and rant real quick here. the fact that the Bulls have started Cristiano Felicio with the starting group in both of these preseason games so far, I get it. Wendell Carter is out, and I think Luke Kornet was out in the first game. All that's fine. But the thing is that Cristiano Felicio should not play a meaningful minute with the starting group this entire season, because the likelihood that basically if that happens, something terrible has happened and most of their front court has gotten hurt. And the idea that you would take what the preseason is for is experimentation and getting kind of an experimental sample of these different lineups and these different potential combinations that you could play with and see what they might look like against real actual competition. And the fact that you would waste those opportunities with the starting unit, with the four guys that are out there, and put Cristiano Felicio in there is so stupid to me. It really, like, as much as I'm encouraged by the shot distribution stuff that we've seen, that is largely the result of them bringing in an offensive coordinator for Boylan. The rotations are still Boylan's call, and that is just such a red flag to me that he would not think that, hey, you know, Wendell's out, let me see what this thing looks like with Lowry at the five, because we've talked about getting Lowry minutes at the five, and part of the rationale for bringing in Thaddeus Young was that he's you know, a starter in a pinch kind of player for the power forward spot. So why not test that out and see what you've got with it? Like, it just made no sense to me to spend, you know, what is a resource, your preseason experimental minutes and lineups. That is a resource that you have available to you, and they just wasted valuable time with Felicio, who should not be playing any of the minutes that matter in this season. And so it just drove me nuts. Like, I'm irrationally angry about it.
No, I mean, that's fair enough. I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone listening to this right now is not a Felicio fan. I don't think there are many amongst us, but it doesn't, yeah, it doesn't really make sense to be starting Felicio at this point. I kind of understand why the logic exists that you would start Felicio, but to your point, this is the time to be trialing things, whether it's Lowry and Thad as your starters, whether it's something different, whether it's getting Daniel Gaffer to start. I don't know, something like that. Just try something a little bit different that maybe you normally wouldn't, because, yeah, I don't know why Felicio is playing. Maybe they're giving him an opportunity to reset the slate and giving him that chance to get in there, but we all know he's bad. I mean, he was a minus 15 tonight. Most of that came in that final quarter where the team sort of, well, they got completely destroyed by the Pelicans' third units. But to your point, there is really nothing to be gained or learned at this point with starting Felicio with the starters or really him playing much at all. I guess he has to play with the third unit guys, but beyond that, he probably shouldn't be playing at all. And when, particularly when you have Felicio starting and then immediately you have Cornet come off the bench and he looks so much more of a superior player, and given that the Bulls have brought him in and he's only earning $2 million or something like that, for a player of Cornet's status to go so far past Felicio, it's weird that they would start Felicio.
Yeah, but to get back to your actual question, because I had to go off on my rant, my ranting tangent. I like, you know, I think a couple of the things that are that are nice about this big man rotation is that they are actually big. Gafford is big and can jump, and then Luke Kornet is like actually 7 feet tall, and, you know, can shoot and protects the rim. I don't think he's, you know, going to be, I think he's the kind of big guy that if you get him on a switch or something like that with a guard, he's probably going to get roasted, but that's most, you know, backup bigs. So like, I don't really hold that against him too much, but you know, he's going to shoot the three. He's going to shoot it whenever he's open. He's not going to hesitate. He's going to provide that spacing element because you have to guard him. You know, I think that he just provides a nice different look that you can have. I thought that it was, there was some nice big to big passing that he had with Lowry during the game. I think there was one point Kornet caught the ball at the top of the key and, you know, the Pelicans defense was scrambled and somehow they all left Lowry wide open underneath the basket. So he just kind of threw a pass over the top of the defense to them, to Lowry, and got him a bucket. Yeah, I mean, I think he's really good. I really have liked what I've seen from Gafford. You know, people that I respect who talked about him in the draft and stuff have said that they were uncertain that his sort of summer league success that he had was going to translate against the sort of real players, because he's, despite being obviously very vertically athletic, he maybe isn't the best athlete laterally. I haven't really seen a ton of evidence of that in the two games that he's played so far. He seems to be able to get production, you know, pretty much against anybody. He was very productive in college. He was very productive in summer league. And so far he's been, in the limited minutes that he's played, he's been pretty productive, in the preseason. So I like what I've seen out of him. I really hope that Wendell gets well soon, because, you know, it sucks not, having him out there to get the cohesion, especially where he missed, you know, so much of last season. And also just like all this stuff helps with development and things like that. So, and like, he didn't get to do summer league this year, which was something that he, you know, as a second year player probably would have been at if he was healthy. So, you know, I think that it would be nice if he was able to get healthy soon. But obviously you don't want to rush him back for preseason. It's not the end of the world if he's not ready, but it would be better if he was getting these minutes as opposed to giving them to Cristiano Felicio.
Definitely. We can all agree on that. And I mean, Wendell's probably not that far away. He was close to playing in this game. Apparently, Boylan was going to potentially play him if he was fine. But if he's not 100%, there's no point in playing him in preseason, and they wisely held him out. But maybe he comes back in the next game. But yeah, we want to see Wendell back, because we talked about the defense being a bit of an issue through two games. But that will get cleaned up some with having Wendell out there. But I guess we should probably close on the other rookie. We talked about Daniel Gafford, but we should probably close with Coby White, who has been super impressive through two games. I was okay with the pick of Coby White at the draft. I always thought he would be a contributor at some point, but At the moment, he's probably a little bit too quick to jack up his shot, but based on his complete all-round game, he's probably done some things that I wasn't necessarily expecting, or at least he's ahead of my development curve that I thought he was on. But what are your thoughts about Coby White through two games? He's been pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you'd like to see him shoot the ball better. He was 40%. He shot 6 of 15 tonight and only made one out of his 5 3-point attempts. So obviously that's not the best. And the other thing, I think that I'm getting the criticisms out of the way, and then I'll tell you what I like about him. he only had one free throw attempt in basically 27 minutes tonight. So, I mean, those are some of the things. Like, he didn't shoot the ball particularly well in summer league. I think he is a shooter. He shot very well in college. And, you know, I think there's a couple of things with his shooting percentages. I think he has been taking kind of difficult shots.
Yeah.
But some of his threes he's been wide open on and he just hasn't hit. Those will go down for him. But the other thing is that I think that in the half court, he doesn't, it's so weird because he is so fast, but I don't think he has like an explosive first step. I think he's just fast. So there's a difference between being like fast over a long period of, you know, of the entire length of the court versus like having that explosive first step in the half court. And he doesn't really have that. And so he struggles to get to his spots in the half court, which is why I think that free throw rate isn't kind of where you'd like to see it. Other than that, though, I have liked some of his passing vision, and I also his sort of individual defense when he's been sort of on an island on defense has been much better than I expected. You know, he's obviously tall for a point guard, but he has that negative wingspan, so he's actually not super huge for point guard and is actually kind of undersized for a two guard when he's playing there. And he's also, you know, fairly weak physically. So you don't expect his defense, especially in an isolation sort of situation, to look all that great. But I thought he, you know, kept guys in front of him and shuffled his feet pretty well and played good positioning and didn't bite on pump fakes. Like there was a bunch of stuff. There was a few times where he got, you know, matched up and, you know, I think whomever it was, I don't remember offhand, but whomever the guards were that were trying to kind of like take advantage of him, I think thought he was going to be easier to have their way with, and he didn't allow it to happen. So I like that. Candidly, was not able to really pay that close of attention to notice how he looked from a team defense perspective. But kind of like I mentioned, I think that the team defense overall was kind of a mess and has been kind of a mess the first two games. I want to say quickly, though, I think the biggest thing that I noticed from the Bulls' whole team defense was just that it seemed like this might just be kinks that need to get ironed out, but it seemed like guys were helping down into the paint and then they were way too slow to react to the corners, which is why they were giving up so many threes. And it just seemed like something about the way that they're playing defense right now. And again, I'm only going based on what the end result was and seeing guys running out to the corners way late. Something about what they're doing, and I don't know what it is because I, again, haven't like sat down and really watched it in slow-mo or like in any sort of detail to kind of understand it. They're just reaction times. It could just be that they're not used to the positioning or whatever, but they're just so slow to those corners. And, you know, that seemed like it was everybody. I'm not picking out Coby White for that. I just, the whole defense, I think, is a big work in progress for everybody from a team defense perspective. But his individual defense, I thought, was pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably been the biggest aspect that I've liked about White. I was expecting him, I wasn't expecting him to be a turnstile to that extent, but I thought he was going to be beaten consistently, at least in the first couple of games, as you would expect. He's a 19-year-old rookie, so, you know, he hasn't necessarily filled into his body, so it wouldn't be too far-fetched to expect that, but he has been holding his own individually, at least. In most matchups, he's looked pretty good. He's been moving his feet very well. He had a great defensive possession against the Bucks where he caused a turnover. I mean, against the Pelicans tonight, I thought his best play tonight was actually a pass that he made to Thad Young along the baseline. He made a nice read where he hit a cutting Thad Young on the backdoor cut.
Yep.
He actually got past Zion, actually. He caught Zion sleeping a little bit, and Coby found him on the pass and threaded the needle and made a nice pass. So if he can make those reads, if he can play some decent defense and maybe just, you know, instead of taking 15 shots, maybe take 12 shots and make those 12 shots good shots, I think then off the bench is that spark plug. Kobe White, he's probably ahead of where I thought he would be. So that's definitely the positive with White as well. So White, Gafford, they're providing something to this rotation, probably a little bit more than I expected, which is obviously good news for the Bulls. Once Wendell Carter comes back, that rotation will be shored up as well. And we probably shouldn't forget Chandler Hutchinson, who'll probably be fighting with Denzel Valentine for some of those backup wing minutes. But I guess that'll be unfolding over the next few days. But look, that's probably all we have for now, Kevin. I'm sure we could probably go on forever talking about, again, the first three quarters of this game. We're ignoring the last quarter, but
yeah, forget that.
Any final takeaways? Yeah, screw that.
Yeah, I just was gonna say quickly the one thing that is good about the whole watching Kobe play, I think, is it does seem to match up with the idea that the Bulls kind of put out there, that they felt like he was further along than sort of they expected, especially after summer league or whatever. Obviously the shots got to start falling, and there are still things to not worry about, but things to that he obviously, every player has weaknesses, especially, you know, players that aren't, you know, number one overall picks, generational prospects or whatever. But I think that it that does kind of match up with what, you know, I think we're seeing, is that he is a better defensive player. He gives effort. That he's further along on that than I think maybe he was thought to be. So it's good that they weren't just, you know, pumping up their player, because that's a thing that they sometimes do. But yeah, overall, I think, you know, even though they're 0-2 so far in the preseason, I think there have been some really encouraging signs. Get well soon, Wendell. Really want to see him play with this group. So hopefully his butt stops being sore soon.
So hopefully, fingers crossed, his butt gets healthy. But I guess the last point that I wanted to make is, Zion Williamson. He looks like he's going to be pretty good.
Zion is we didn't really talk about him.
Totally forgot about
at all. But he's unbelievable, and you know, I'm still a little bitter that the Bulls didn't win the lottery. No offense, Kobe White, but yeah, Zion looks like the real deal, and his like pro hop move that he does in the lane is like one of the most terrifying things I've seen, like, from an opposing player, because he's explosive into the jump on the hop, but the second hop or the second jump after the hop is like, you don't know which direction he's going to go into it, but whichever direction he goes, he's going to be explosive. And his touch around the basket is also like, I had seen him do it in college, but like, you never know how it's going to translate against bigger guys and more athletic guys. But his, you know, finishing up and over and around guys, even when he's not able to dunk everything, is you know, pretty high level. I guess there's a reason his, you know, I think he finished at the basket at like some like high 70s, maybe 80% or some crazy number like that in college. So that is definitely translated for him. He's a freak, and he's probably going to win Rookie of the Year if there's any justice in the world.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, 92% from the field today, 12 or 13 from the field. Just a complete freak. We obviously know him playing above the rim, but to your point, if he hops and takes like his massive weight into some guy's rib cage or some guy's shoulder, there is literally no way that you can stop Zion. I was actually fearful for Lowry having to guard Zion or whoever it was that was matched up on Zion at some points, because there is literally nothing you can do about this guy, and it seems that's the case already. But what an absolute freak. But mate, I appreciate you joining me to talk about the first couple preseason games, about our Bulls. Thankfully, they won through three quarters. That is all we're acknowledging, and that's all I care to talk about.
The starters won. Forget maybe. That. The starters won.
The starters won. That's it. That's it. But before you get away, tell everyone where they can follow you online, if for whatever reason they're not already doing so.
Yeah. If you don't already follow me and you listen to this podcast, well, I've been on it a bunch of times, so congratulations for refusing to follow me before this. But yeah, so it's at NBA Couchside. I've had that handle for really long time now, an embarrassingly long time. I've been on Twitter. I sometimes write things on my little Medium blog, but it's pretty rare these days. I mostly just shout into the void on Twitter about the Bulls and various other things.
No, I mean, that's a pretty good summation of who you are. So I appreciate that. But follow Kevin on Twitter at NBA Couchside. Mate, I appreciate you coming on. We'll obviously do this as the season progresses. But thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for tuning in. It's been a fun couple opening preseason games for the Bulls. Obviously today, like I said, the first three quarters were amazing, but we'll see what happens over the next few preseason games. We'll be back again next week to wrap up those. So be on the lookout for all of that in the usual spots. Follow me on Twitter at MK Hoops. Follow the show on Twitter too at Bulls HQ Pod. If you want to join in the discussion, we've got a Discord forum for Bulls HQ going right now. So if you want to be part of that, send us an email at bullshqpod@gmail.com. Get on that and join the conversation. But appreciate you joining in on this episode of the show. Hopefully you enjoyed it, and we'll see what happens over the next few preseason games. We'll talk then, Bulls fans.